Talking sports in the afternoon. This is the Big Show on Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
Last year, Ryan Johansson, as a member of the Columbus Blue Jackets, played in all 82 games, scored 33 goals with 30 assists, 63 points, led the Jackets in that category. The year prior to that, split the season right down the middle, 40 games in Springfield, 40 games with Columbus. His first NHL season was 2011-2012 when he played 67 games, scored 9 goals and 12 assists. He is currently a, well, all due respect to Ian Pulver, he's a free agent, a restricted free agent. Most of us term him as a holdout.
He's not a holdout yet, though. He's not a holdout because Camp had start.
Right.
Then he's a holdout.
So we asked a simple question. Would you put an offer sheet in on Ryan Johansson, yes or no? Now, here's the thing. You know,
is from a Flames perspective.
Sure. The dollar figure, what we believe is to be accurate from the best reporting that we've seen, is that the team wants him in around $3.5 million. So that the compensation for that, if you sign him to an offer sheet, is a first round and a third round pick in this draft. Now, it appears that the player and the agent are looking for something in the $6.5 million range. Well, that would put you at a first round, second round, and a third round pick in the draft that Eichel and McDavid are in. So, Josh, what were the results from the listeners? Where are most of the results?
Good response to the text line. The results pretty one-sided, though. 75% of people saying they would not do that. 25% saying that they would give an offer sheet to Ryan Johansson.
Hmm. Are you surprised?
No. Because I think what's important is, and I know that you kind of, I think it is important to say what team or what perspective you're coming from, because it's completely different. If you're the Oilers, I think it's an automatic, you know, or it's a much easier right. thing to say yes. If you're the Flames,
right.
you know, you have this Connor, from a Flames fan perspective anyway, you've got this Connor McDavid thing that is,
right.
is a factor. If you're giving up a first-round pick, that's a factor. So if it's theoretically from a good team's perspective and the cap room is there, it's different than a situation like where the Flames are right now in year two of a rebuild to give a guy like that an offer sheet. As soon as this draft and a first-round pick in this 2015 draft
yep.
enters into the equation with a team like the Flames, it changes the discussion like that, and I think it did. And that would be the overwhelming reason
yeah.
why there'd be a 75% no.
I agree. You know, I wouldn't put an offer sheet in for him. The kind of the genesis of this question comes from, you know, Kurt Overhart, the agent for Ryan Johansson, was on Toronto Radio, TSN in Toronto Radio today, and, you know, did what a good agent does. He didn't pour gasoline onto it, wasn't going to respond to the comments that have been made by Kekalainen or by John Davidson, wasn't going to deal with numbers in the public, did all of those things, then was asked a simple question on the possibility of an offer sheet. We'll have to see. What leverage, what hammer does Ryan Johansson have right now?
Doesn't really have one, other than his, if he's willing to stick to his guns. And if that's what it is, if he and his agent are willing to stick
sure.
to their guns, that's the only hammer he has. I mean, I guess the KHL, but I don't really think that's a true,
right.
Like a real thing that's going to scare off the Columbus Blue Jackets. Not a whole lot right now. I mean, I do think there would be a few teams who would think about giving him an offer sheet. I don't completely write
that
off.
But that is the only leverage, though, right?
That's the way the NHL's free agency progression is structured, so that you don't have a ton of leverage at 22, and you don't get to the point where you have leverage until you have tenure in the league. You
right.
can agree with it or disagree with it, but that's how it's structured. That's why guys don't get to unrestricted free agency until they have tenure in the league.
Yeah.
And then they can choose their spot. Right now, he's still a team-controlled asset.
Right.
Yes, he has more rights as a restricted free agent than if he was under contract, or there are more options or whatever, but he still does not have the freedom to just choose his spot. So you have, if you want to be in that spot, or if you want to go somewhere else, you have to do things differently if you're Ryan Johansson. Or if you want to have leverage, you have to look at things in a more creative way. Whereas if Ryan Johansson is coming to an end of a contract and he wants more money, and then the leverage is, well, let's go somewhere else. Somebody will give me that money.
Right.
But you don't have that same thing as a restricted free agent. But you have to go about it the way the NHL structured things.
I think that there's just two forms of leverage here. One is withholding service, and one is the offer sheet. And I'm, you know, now that you go through the compensation and now you begin to have that honest, you know, real honest talk about it, I just don't see a scenario in which the offer sheet's going to come into play.
I mean, offer sheets are so rare anyway.
Right.
Right? So,
right.
So that makes it it's a fun conversation, and
sure,
it always is.
Well, you can take McDavid and Eichel out of this. It's still going to be a good draft. Right?
Mm-hmm.
This is supposed to be a very good draft.
Well,
because
a first-round pick in any draft is a valuable thing.
Right, right.
But if you, the reason I throw out the Oilers is because the Edmonton Oilers are at a situation now, mm-hmm, where they don't want to be in lottery pick conversations. They don't want to have to worry about, oh, is it going to be Leon Draisaitl or is it going to be Sam Bennett?
Right.
They want to be in a spot where they're talking about, are they going to get to round two? Are they going to win game seven? Like,
yeah,
that's the type of conversation the Oilers want to be in. They want to get better right now. Well, Ryan Johansson makes them better right now, and they're a team that could part with a first-round pick. They're a team that it would make more sense. And the one thing I'll say, and this is why I was so for the Flames giving the offer sheet to Ryan O'Reilly, in theory, the execution didn't work. The execution was not there because of the whole thing that came out afterwards with the waivers.
Right.
But what I liked about the theory of giving Ryan O'Reilly the offer sheet was, I don't remember exactly what the compensation was. I think it was similar to this, first, second, and third round pick, I believe. But Ryan O'Reilly is likely better right now than a lot of first round picks. And maybe not a number one, number two overall pick, but Ryan O'Reilly is a heck of a hockey player. That is an established center. That is a guy who wins hockey games. The guy is on trajectory to have an incredible career right now.
Right.
Like, to have a guy like Ryan O'Reilly in your organization, that's worth giving up that type of ransom for. But in a situation where you have a real opportunity at a guy who's generational like McDavid, that changes the conversation.
Well, and then we're going to come back to the leverage then. So what is the leverage? The only leverage that the player has is holding out. At what point, and we should report that Aaron Portsline from the Columbus Dispatch about an hour a bit ago said that, you know, Johansson's packed his bags. He's going back to Vancouver. Not surprising. You know, training camp, physicals are tomorrow. Teams are on the ice on Friday, that type of thing. What is the so what are we hearing from the Blue Jackets? You know, only, I think Kekalainen said yesterday, only concentrating on the guys that are in camp. So are they prepared to go to camp and then just shut the door? Is that how this is going to work? That has to be the play right now, doesn't it? Like almost a cooling off period?
Yeah, although you have to realize that you got to get them in camp at some point. Like, or not in camp. You got to get them signed at some point, or you have to make the call. You can't, if you really want to take that next step, I mean, don't you either need to trade Johansson and bring something in to help or sign him? That's the biggest thing for me is that they've brought in Hartnell, and Horton's going to play a full season or at least have a full training camp. And Bobrovsky's there, and you're right now looking like you're primed to take a step and maybe fight for not just a wild card but a metropolitan spot in the playoffs.
Yep.
But you probably aren't as well fit to do that without Ryan Johansson. So your leading scorer isn't there from last year. You still have to be cognizant of how he helps you win on the ice. So that's why I think it's such a tough spot for the Blue Jackets to be in, because, yes, you're being smart and prudent the way you're dealing with this. And from a strictly idealistic standpoint, I agree with what the Blue Jackets are doing.
Mm-hmm.
But then hockey comes into it. And then the fact that you've got a real chance to do something this year comes into it. Your chances are far better doing it with the player than without.
Do they sign him? Do they get this done? Is that still the... You know, there's always a gambling site that's going to put percentages on things right now. But are the odds in favor of this player being signed eventually at some point by the Blue Jackets? Or are we close now to getting to that point of no return where,
well,
you know, as I said before, Kyle Turris was all about getting out of Phoenix. He signed, ended up playing a handful of games before he got traded. But that was all about getting out of Phoenix a couple years ago.
I'll go with recent history and say that, yes, he does end up signing a contract with the Blue Jackets. I don't know what happens after that, because O'Reilly signed with the Avalanche, even though it was an offer sheet that forced it.
Yep.
Turris signed with Phoenix, even though a few days later he was dealt to Ottawa.
Yep.
Fact is, both guys signed. And so, by hook or by crook, I think Johansson will eventually sign with the Columbus Blue Jackets. The question is, will it be too late for the Blue Jackets and their on-ice exploits this year? Will it be too late for the relationship? Will it be too fractured for them to be able to repair? These are the questions
Well, you look at P.K. Subban missed, what, the first Montreal game coming out of the lockout, and then played well enough to win the Norris. Drew Doughty missed time at the start of an L.A. Kings season.
Missed a whole camp, remember.
Right, missed a whole camp. But that didn't really, you know, it set him back.
Talked about him having a rough start to the season, but
certainly a nice finish to the season, right?
Yeah, he's been all right since, too.
Yeah, he's been okay. He's been okay. I guess what fascinates me the most is how, not over the top, but how dramatic the comments have been from John Davidson, the president of the Blue Jackets, and Kekalainen, the general manager of the Blue Jackets. They have not minced their words. And we should also point out, they're not alone. Apparently, we've got a very similar situation going on in Ottawa right now. The Senators are not happy with Bobby Ryan's agent. Larry Kelly went public with the figures in a proposed deal that Bobby Ryan turned down. You've got a couple of instances here where it's really kind of turned into team versus agent.
Mm-hmm.
And by design, that's what the agent's paid for. He's paid to take the bullets and protect the player in this case. And I think both of the agents have done a nice job of, you know, we know it's Ryan Johansson involved. We know it's Bobby Ryan. But right now it's really team versus agent.
Well, and John Davidson knew exactly what he was doing when he talked today.
Yeah,
it's not as if he was... Oh, and you know what? I'm going to just talk about Ryan Johansson.
Sure.
That was a very calculated move. And John's a very skilled guy at this point in these type of things. So, yeah, this is turning into a boardroom battle. And we're going to – I think that we'll probably hear a couple more things from the agents and maybe the Bobby Ryan thing. I don't know how that's going to play out. But I do think we'll probably hear a little bit more from Overhart here in the next little while before this is all said and done. He'll probably have a shot across the bow or two when it comes to Columbus. And
he had the opportunity today, Pat, and
he didn't have time to calculate his next move, right? So he was being asked immediately what his response was to this. Well, John Davidson probably had this calculated for a little while, and now Overhart's got to come up with his response.
No. I mean, Overhart, it wasn't John Davidson. John Davidson talked yesterday in Traverse City. Overhart went on today. Mm-hmm. He had an opportunity. He's been down this path before, right? He knows what he's doing. He's done this in the past. And I think that's what's beginning to worry in Columbus, because he's got some other players in Columbus, not just Ryan Johansson. He has some other players in there as well. So, we've seen that before where agents kind of Kirby Reichel, pardon me, took Davidson pointed out that it took 3 months last year to get an entry level deal for prospect Kirby Reichel, who's also represented by Overhart. That leads me to believe if you're pointing that out, you're pointing out a trend, right? So we're loggerheads here with the agent.
Is that a personality clash? Is that just the agent and the way he goes about his business? I don't know, but this is a scary situation for Columbus. It's going to work out fine for Johansson. He's going to get paid somewhere. I think he knows that. The agent knows that. It's just a scary spot for the Blue Jackets to be in, just because of what their opportunity is right now. I don't even know the right way for them to handle it. Like I don't know how you go about doing this properly if you're John Davidson and Jarmo Kekalainen, because
they sound like they've exhausted. They sound like they're exhausted.
Yeah.
They sound like they've gone down the path. There's no resolve here. What are we left to do? So now here you go. Here, as we say, Davidson came out and said, here are the deals we've offered. This is what we've offered the player. And now that those numbers have become public, he's the one, he's the next. So is that not enough? How do you justify walking away from these deals, right?
Tough spot. It really is. I as much as you can feel bad for very
highly compensated
St.
Louis, but St. Louis is not going through this, right? To this point,
we haven't heard much at all about that. That one's
the
been
only
very
thing we're
quiet.
The only thing we're hearing is there's not any traction being.
Yeah, made. It's just very quiet in the, like, okay, well, yeah, they're still talking, but there's just, they're at different sides. But it's not contentious like this. It's not getting nasty, or it's not getting public or anything like that. And same with the Dallas ones and the Boston ones, they're not getting public. Even Darcy Kuemper's kind of fallen off a little bit.
Darcy Kuemper's getting a little bit more, I would disagree with that. I think Torrey Krug looks more and more like Torrey Krug's not coming to camp in Boston. You can understand that. You brought up Darcy Kuemper. Josh Harding's injury now looks like it's not weeks, it's months.
I agree with that. I think it's more urgent, but I don't know. Like, we haven't heard about the whole Darcy Kuemper. It's been about a week since we've heard news in that respect.
Well, Mike Russo in his blog today was talked to both Fletcher and Yo. Chuck Fletcher, the general manager of the Wild, and Mike Yo. Yo addressed the Kuemper situation for the first time, saying, quote, "I'm very frustrated about it, to be honest with you. We're doing what we can here. I understand there's both sides to this, but I'm looking at it from our team standpoint, and there's a very good opportunity there for someone like Kemps to come in and really prove he can be a full-time NHL goalie," end quote. And another quote, "This is an unbelievable opportunity for him. Not only am I looking at it from a competitive standpoint for our team, I'm looking at it for a development of this player as well." Fletcher a little frustrated. There has been some talk today that the Wild, and Mike Russo tweeted this just moments ago, that the Wild may approach Brizgalov about a potential PTO at camp. Mm. You know, again, things that kind of, you scratch your head and you go, if you believe what is being reported, $800,000 seems to be amicable by the player and the team on a one-year deal. They just want a one-way deal, not the two-way. You know, it doesn't, this appears not to be term, this appears not to be dollars, this appears to be all about playing in the American Hockey
League. So if you're the Minnesota Wild and you know that Josh Harding is not going to be ready for camp and might miss regular season time, and Nick Backstrom would then become your default number one goaltender without Kuemper there, you're not willing to make the leap to a one-way contract on a one-year deal? Like, is that really what we're talking about right here?
Right now.
Makes zero sense to me. We cannot give him a one-year deal. He might be your best option right now, and you're not willing to give him a one-year deal for a one-way deal for 1 year. That
right.
Seems very
well.
Very
but what do you do when Harding comes back?
Is
carry three?
Is Kuemper a better option right now than Josh Harding? And I hate saying this because I know.
Oh yeah, no. But
you have no idea one day, one week to the next,
right,
if Harding's going to be able to go.
Right.
And Backstrom to me is not a legit number one goaltender anymore.
Right.
Because I think that his play has regressed and there's a ton of injury questions.
Yeah.
Kemper's probably your best bet in the organization right now, or at the very least, there's a chance he could be your best
player. I think this comes back to, you know, we're talking about the 10-year anniversary of the CBA, and one of the legacies, the lasting legacies of the CBA is it's a cap league. And part of the result of the cap is managing the said cap. Minnesota's problems this year may pale in comparison to next year. When you look at the list of RFAs that they have to deal with next year, Granlund, Coyle, and on it goes, Brodin, et cetera, you know, I don't think they're identical, but I do have to give Brad Treliving credit because his goalies are just parked perfectly right now. You've got, you know, Kari Ramo coming off and his contract ends this year. You've got Hiller for 2 years, and you got your Yoni Orteo to agree to a 2-year deal with the one way kicking in next year.
Mm-hmm.
It's all laid out. That's not the case in Minnesota. Do you say goodbye to one of those goalies? That seems to be what you'd have to do, or you're carrying three goalies when Harding gets healthy.
Wouldn't it be easy to say goodbye to one of those goaltenders right now? Like, wouldn't it be easy to divest from Nick Backstrom at this point?
I would have to think, Pat, that they've tried. I would have to think they're probably like every other team in the National Hockey League. You don't think that Calgary Flames would like to move away from a certain defenseman on this team?
Oh, absolutely.
Right. And Edmonton's probably got contracts they'd like to move and all of that thing. But who wants them? Who's going to take them? You're right about Josh Harding, and nobody wants to talk about it. He's battled. He's fought. He's got himself into a good position, but he's unable to stay healthy. This is not the MS. This is an ankle injury now. Who's going to take Josh Harding? So then you're talking about asking your owner to bury a contract or one of those contracts, and there's going to be a cap component to that as well because they're both over the limit.
That's all fine and good.
Yeah.
But, I mean, it's So then your conversation becomes economic versus on ice. And it
absolutely
comes right down to
absolutely
it. Because and I don't know. I mean, Minnesota has been pretty they've been pretty open with spending money here the last little while.
And I think it's caught up to them.
But they're significantly hurting their on ice product if they roll with Harding and back.
Here's the interesting part about what you're talking about. Let me help you argue against me. If you bring Brizgalov in on a PTO and he works out, what are you putting him on then? Signing him to, right?
Well, he might sign a two-way contract. That might be easier. Brizgalov might sign a two-way. He just wants to play.
Right.
So that might not be the worst backup
option signs a deal, not unlike the Devin Setoguchi deal.
Where it's easy to bury in the American.
Right, because there's no cap component to it. It's tricky, man. It's tricky. And then, like we say, we haven't even talked about Boston, who has two RFAs that they want to have. It appears to be nothing more than, you know, they've got to move a body to create space to get Torrey Krug in there, Matt Fraser in there. Riley Smith and Torrey Krug to get those guys in there. And by the way, we haven't even talked about Ryan Ellis.
Ryan Ellis in Nashville and Dallas.
Have you checked out Dropcam? You should. Dropcam.
There's a segment, segue there.
Oh, no, we're coming back. Oh, we'll come back to this. Dropcam.com is the ultimate in flexibility.
Minnesota Wild
do not have flexibility.
You know what's tricky? Getting around Dropcam.
Exactly.
I thought you might go that way.
Nothing fancy about that.
Nope.
Dropcam.com. Check it out online, or you can check it out at Best Buy and Future Shop. The ultimate in flexibility. You heard the commercial running before from a cat's perspective. You know, if you're a pet owner and you're wanting to give your pet the free range of the house, this is the perfect item for you, because all you need is Wi-Fi and a plug-in. You plug it in. You log on to your computer at work. You can watch. You can log on to your iPhone, your Android phone. You can put the app on there. You can watch. More importantly than that, you know, maybe there's something significant going on. Maybe something's getting overturned in the house and you don't know what it's doing. Well, with the optional cloud recording, you can go back and look at the tape. And how often have we said that? You got to go back and look at the tape. Well, you can do that with Dropcam. Check it out, dropcam.com. Best Buy and Future Shop. Take a break and come back with more. It's Sportsnet 960, The Fan.
Talking sports in the afternoon. This is The Big Show on Sportsnet 960, The Fan.
We have a strong stance regarding the protection and welfare of children. Adrian will be away from the team and focus on his personal situation. We will support Adrian during this legal and personal process, but we firmly believe this is the right decision.
Vikings old owner Ziggy Wolf, who essentially did a 180 in a span of 24 hours, backlash to yesterday's announcement that the Vikings would reactivate Adrian Peterson and he would participate in all team events. That changed again today. He has been... He will get full pay, but he's been placed on the suspended list. What's the official definition of this? It's the
commissioner-exempt list?
Commissioner-exempt list. Thank you.
Greg Hardy's on there now.
Greg Hardy is now on there?
Yeah, that just happened earlier today.
Okay. Last night, Ray Rice went through his appeal with the NFL. Really, Pat, the big one to me was, and we talked about it yesterday, and I asked if it was a game changer. Anheuser-Busch coming out with a statement. Strongly worded, however you want to describe it. To me, the big takeaway in the fact was that they said, you know, we're not satisfied with the way this is being handled. Not, you know, we're not happy about it, but we're satisfied. They weren't happy about it. I asked yesterday if we would see more companies follow suit. We did. Statements also came out from PepsiCo, McDonald's, Visa, and Campbell's Soup, all of which are major sponsors, major players in advertising in the NFL. That goes without saying. The Vikings themselves have felt ramifications of this. They lost a sponsor. Many are speculating it's Radisson Hotels, who yesterday, when the Vikings held their first press conference, were right in the backdrop with the logo and Radisson logo, just, you know, any other backdrop. Today, when Ziggy Wolf did his announcement, it was just strictly the Vikings logo in the backdrop. Adrian Peterson himself has been dropped by a number of different companies, including Nike, EpiPen, and some others. We have seen, you know, in the last 24, 48 hours, a lot of corporate America stand up and take notice of this. I do ask the question that you asked yesterday. Are they doing this genuinely? Are they doing this because they feel they have to? Is this a business play? Is this a public? You would hope that they're all doing it for the right reasons. Regardless of the motivation, these are indeed challenging times for Roger Goodell.
They are. And now I want to, because I still think, okay, if it was Budweiser and Anheuser-Busch who kind of led the way yesterday.
Sure.
I want to see now what the, because the NFL responded, said they have things that they are looking at doing,
right,
and we'll know in the near future, et cetera, et cetera. So let's see what those things are. And then when those are announced, let's see if we hear anything else. Like, does that mean that Anheuser-Busch is going to come out and say, we are satisfied? I don't know. But if we hear them come out and say, no, that's not good enough, well, then that's your true indication that, you know, maybe the game changer has transpired. Maybe we are talking about things really being altered at this point. And you know, the team stuff, that is more of a smaller picture type thing. And it is obviously still a big deal for the Minnesota Vikings, and the NFL is going to. But my question is, because there's different viabilities city to city, market to market. Is there a corporation that'll truly, because of principle, pull their money from the marketing beast that is the National Football League? And whether this stuff has happened or not, that doesn't change the fact the NFL is the premier sporting property in North America, and there are going to be plenty of people lining up to replenish those dollars. So does Anheuser-Busch, if they truly are completely dissatisfied with what the NFL has done, do they have the chutzpah to put their money where their mouth is? And that is exactly what
it is. Okay, just back up here. I want to make sure I understand this. You believe that if Anheuser-Busch pulls, somebody will fill that void?
You're telling me that a competing beer company won't? It might take a little while, but you're telling me that the NFL, being the beast that they are and with the eyeballs that are on them, that there's not going to be Miller or I'm trying to think of another.
Somebody else
is going to jump in and be the title beer sponsor of the National Football League?
What I don't know is if there's anybody of that size and class to fill that void individually, right? Anheuser-Busch is a pretty big company.
It's a monster for sure.
Yeah, yeah.
But, I mean, I don't know.
It's an interesting question because, you know, it begs the, so is, are we just as a matter of waiting it out?
I think so.
Because if it happened, let's just build a hypothetical that Anheuser-Busch says, okay, we've had enough. As of, you know, 8 o'clock Eastern time on Thursday morning, we're stopping all checks. We want our name removed. It's gone. Now here's this gaping void. At 8:01, does somebody slot in and take that? I don't think so. I don't think so. And you said yourself, it'll probably take some time, and you're probably right.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think this, you know, we kind of edge around all of this. I don't think this is going to take down the NFL. I don't think this is what it's about. I don't think this is about.
I don't think
the
NFL wants to lose Budweiser.
No, not at all.
Because I think long term, that might do damage for them getting more money in the future because
right.
It affects their brand. Even though there'd be somebody that would come in or two beer companies would come in and replenish that money, it still hits their brand and sets them back 5 years from now from being where they want to be here. It might make it so they can only get to here on their trajectory, right? So I still think they want to keep Anheuser-Busch and keep sponsors. Don't get me wrong. I'm not trying to say that. Oh yeah.
No, your point being is if they lose them, they'll be filled.
And the bigger point is whether they lose them or not, they're still the NFL,
yeah,
and people are still going to be watching as much. And
well, a lot was made of Kobe Bryant when Kobe Bryant went through his personal individual scandal with his wife. He was dropped like a hot rock. That, you know, people walked away from him. There was a lot of talk about would he ever be a marketable, you know, commodity again. And it took a year, maybe took 2 or 3 years, but eventually Kobe Bryant was back in the advertising game. The same thing could be said about Tiger Woods, right? When Tiger Woods when the incident happened involving his wife.
Numerous. Yep.
And I believe he was able to bring, you know, not necessarily the same sponsors, but in some cases the same sponsors back to the table later on. So there's absolutely validity to what you're saying.
Mm-hmm. Well, and for Budweiser, are they, and I'm saying Budweiser, Anheuser-Busch, whatever, are they willing to pull their money from there, knowing that the NFL is still the top of the pile?
Right.
And you're going to be losing a ton of brand saturation by not being affiliated with the National Football mm-hmm. League. And I'm not mm-hmm. saying that it's not going to cripple Budweiser either. It's just more that.
Are they crying wolf?
Exactly. And that's why I'm curious to see what the next two steps are. What does the NFL do? Because they're going to respond to this.
Yeah.
And then what do the companies do afterwards? Is it going to be enough?
Peter King from Monday Morning Quarterback, SI, reporting today that he talked to a source close to the commissioner, Roger Goodell, who said, quote, Roger has determined that he will be a leader in the domestic violence space, end quote. So whether that's a leak, a plant, whatever you want to say, the word on the street is that because we haven't heard from Roger Goodell right now, don't read into that because he's you know, he's rallying the troops and he's getting ready to come back and he's going to announce that, you know, the NFL is going to take a leadership role in domestic violence. Look, I've said all along, that's the ultimate that could come out of this. The best case scenario is that we have an honest conversation about this. The best case scenario is that, you know, the NFL leads the charge in domestic abuse and you know, getting that topic out there. Very curious about what the next 2 weeks hold for the NFL. You know, this one has gone beyond the typical time frame for a crisis. Don't you agree?
Mm-hmm.
That normally a crisis is a couple of days, you know.
A bunch of them, right?
Right. And you know, and I said to you earlier today, if you begin to read a lot of things, there's a lot of people coming out of the woodwork now, right? Everybody wants their pound of flesh. Now it's, you know, you have a very prominent lawyer in Atlanta coming forward this afternoon with some more people that have, and I'm not surprised. That's what happens here. And you call it noise, you call it clouding or whatever. There are going to be a lot of people that are going to keep this in the forefront for a while. I'm not sure that we have seen the watershed to this point. Mm-hmm. I still think that's to come. But to me, the ball is, you know, bad pun, but the ball is definitely, you know, in the NFL's court. What are they going to do?
Yep. I agree with that.
What's the next step?
I agree with that. Because, okay, they have been challenged. How do they respond? And that how they respond, then we see how, you know, the counter response is from these companies, these corporations who have said what they've had to say, who have made their point clear. They don't like what's going on right now. So clean your act up. Does the NFL respond accordingly and in a satisfactory manner? I guess we'll wait and see.
One of the most fascinating components of all of this, Pat, is who says what to whom right now? You know, we saw that with the, you know, we've got Thursday Night Football coming up tomorrow. The week ago, Thursday Night Football was, you know, all eyes were on it. How was CBS going to deal with this? What was going to be said? Who was going to say what? There's going to be an element of that. There are a lot of people that are dying just to get back to regular old football talk.
Yep.
Just give me regular old football talk.
I'm one of it.
There's a lot. Well, yeah. And there's a lot of people that are saying, I'm not done with this. You know, now I want to be heard. Now I want my pound of flesh. This weekend is, if you could ever have a weekend where you had no problems, if everybody kept, you know, everybody kept in the straight and narrow, this is the weekend. The NFL could really use that.
It goes back to my question I asked in the 1 o'clock hour a few times. Why is it so hard for them to get it right the first time? And I wonder, had the NFL taken the correct measures on Ray Rice and had the Minnesota Vikings taken the correct measures on Adrian Peterson, these stories would still hurt. They would still not paint the NFL in a good manner. But how much further ahead would the National Football League be right now?
I think it just simply comes down to people underestimated the story. And people underestimated the breadth of it. They underestimated the response to things.
I get that on the Rice story. I don't know how a week later you could underestimate again on Peterson. And this time it wasn't as if there was anything that really changed either. They were just like, oh, I screwed up. We better do this differently.
It might be as simple as something as old-time thinking behind closed doors was just the hell with it. We're a football team. We're paid to play football. Let's put our best players in there. The hell with the public relations component. This isn't a public relations component. This is a football decision. And at the end of the day, it's not. It is a public relations issue. It might be something just as simple as that. Sportsnet 960 and Dice Hockey Apparel, giving you a real, real cool opportunity to help kids sport with the Rhettism t-shirts. We've got four different Rhett Warner-inspired t-shirts. All the proceeds go to help kids sport. I believe tipped over close to $2,000 in donation to kids sport already as of last night. If you want to check out the t-shirts, if you want to order the t-shirts, go to sportsnet.ca/960 to order yours today. All the proceeds, as we mentioned, going to kids sport. Coming up a little later on, back to Columbus we go. Jody Shelley from Fox Sports Television will join us, the former NHLer. We'll talk about the Ryan Johansson situation. Then at 4:45 this afternoon, the East-West Hot Stove. Al Morganti and Eric DeHatchek. Looking forward to that conversation. All coming up, Sportsnet 960, The Fan.
Talking sports in the afternoon. This is The Big Show on Sportsnet 960, The Fan.
Expecting today to have a lot of energy when we play this game, and really we want to try to build on where we left off against Vancouver and Penticton. So that's kind of what we're looking for with the group tonight, is another solid 60-minute effort.
Ryan Huska. Be behind the bench as the Calgary Flames take on the USC Dinos tonight, 7 o'clock at Father David Bauer. Tickets are available at the door, but this game will likely be a hot ticket. You might want to get your tickets online ahead of time. Simple as that. The lineup tonight, Garnet Hathaway, Turner Ellison, Hunter Smith, David Wolf, Brandon McGee, Bryce Van Brabant, Morgan Klimchuk, Josh Juris, Austin Carroll, Kenny Agostino, Billy Arnold, Pavel Pedakin, Pat Seeloff, Keegan Kanzig, Ryan Culkin, Brett Kulak, Curtis Gettig, Jason Fram, Mason McDonald, and Doug Carr will split the duties in goal. And then it's on to main camp.
Mm-hmm.
And the first game, a split squad game, coming up on Sunday. So
yeah, if you're
not a lot of time.
With the time, 6 o'clock on Sunday is puck drop with
okay.
The 5 o'clock pregame show. So that's and 'cause I know that for the longest time, people didn't even know when that game was starting, but it sounds like 6 o'clock, and that's what the promos are saying. So 6 o'clock, time on Sunday. Yep.
Tonight, I'm just looking at the roster. I don't know how much of this is last chance territory, maybe for Jason Fram, a guy on a tryout from Spokane. There's a couple of guys on tryouts. I suppose Pavel Pedakin falls in that same group. Now, did Pedakin play in Penticton?
Yeah, I played the one game, played the Saturday night game.
Okay.
Yeah.
Distinguish himself.
He had a couple of decent scoring opportunities. Like, he was fine. Didn't look out of place or anything like that. Didn't look spectacular. Again, the two tryouts to me that were the ones kind of leading the way were Hathaway and Gettig. But we'll see. The thing with Pedakin is that I think that they would like to somehow help him find a pro home. Because
yes.
he's in the sister organization in the Calgary Hitmen, has been, but there's really no place for him there right now. He's a overager and an import, so that doesn't really work very well in the Canadian Hockey League.
Two-spot guy.
Exactly. So, you know, they're hoping to find him a North American pro spot. Is it going to be within the Flames organization? Maybe not, but maybe him continuing on through a tryout might be able to attract interest elsewhere from an American League team or an NHL team to put him on a two-way contract or something like that.
And his story has been well represented in the media. I know there was a couple written about him last week. Was all signed, sealed, and delivered, going to play in the KHL, I believe, in hometown? Was it his hometown, or is he from the Ukraine?
Yes, he's Ukrainian for sure.
Right,
yeah.
So he was going to play actually the same team that Anton Babchuk
Donbass,
played.
Right?
Donbass, yeah. But unfortunately, the conflict between Ukraine and separatists took away that opportunity. I believe last week the separatists stormed the offices of the hockey team. I believe the arena has been damaged and those types of things. So he's left without a home, a hockey home anyway. So he's back over here. Billy Arnold. Billy Arnold's in this group too. Billy Arnold often overshadowed by the guy he played college with, Johnny Gaudreau. Now, did you see much of Billy Arnold in Penticton?
He played a lot. Played a lot of defensive minutes, a lot of penalty kill minutes. I thought he was actually pretty good. I didn't have a problem with Bill Arnold at all. I think he's still kind of getting used to being more streamlined.
Mm-hmm.
He's not the guy that we saw at the draft in L.A. He's not the guy that we saw even when he played his first game. He's trimmed down.
No, he's a hockey player. Yeah.
He's not a gym rat anymore. He looks like a streamlined hockey player. So I think he's kind of still getting used to that.
Sure.
He's still kind of coming into his own in that regard. But I thought he was fine. Blocked a lot of shots and won some faceoffs. Was put out there for some important faceoffs. So I think that's the role that Ryan Huska is going to use him in Adirondack. I don't think Bill Arnold's a threat for an NHL spot right now.
Right.
But in Adirondack, I think he's going to be used as kind of that very important defensive minutes type center, reliable two-way guy, used in penalty kill situations, last minute sure. situations, shutdown situations, and that's kind of how he was used.
But he may have to battle Corbin Knight for that time too.
Yeah,
you know, Corbin Knight will be one of the guys that, you know, would want to push for a spot up with the big club. But, you know, jobs being the way they are, there's a potential you could have both of those
and
guys.
And depending
down.
On what they decide to do with Josh Juris, does he play down the middle or does he play on the wing? He might be kind of in that same category, too. So there's some interesting battles that could be had in Abbotsford this year. And a guy that you asked me that a little earlier, anybody jump off the page? I forgot about one guy, and that's the former Red Deer Rebels captain, Turner Ellison.
Yeah.
Had a great tournament. He really did. And he actually looked pretty good at last year's tournament, too. But it didn't really translate last year in his first full year of pro once he was there. Spent some time at Abbotsford and some time in Alaska. Eventually won the Kelly Cup in the ECHL. Can he spend the entire year in Abbotsford this year? And can we see some of that jump? He created a lot off the rush. He was physical.
Right.
Can he kind of translate some of what he's done in this rookie part of camp or this prospect part of camp and maybe bring it into main camp and impress the Flames a little bit more?
Well, he's got a little bit of the edge that they're always talking about. And Turner Ellison's a good head. I mean, he knows what, you know, he is. He knows what his role is. Yeah, I mean, I suspect he's going to be a full-time guy in Adirondack. So there you go. This, you know, this roster alone features three guys that could be full-time centermen in Adirondack this year.
Yep.
You know, what I said before, and I go back to it, the group of really four defensemen in there, Seeloff, Kanzig, Kulak, Culkin, these are going to be guys we're going to be talking about for the next couple of years of whether or not they're going to be able to graduate from the American Hockey League level to the NHL League level. I mean, Keegan likely goes back to the Western Hockey League this year. But what about Pat Seeloff? You know, Pat Seeloff's a guy that they really, really like. And if he didn't get hurt last year, I am convinced would have been in Calgary for part of the season.
Yep. I think I was convinced that he was at some point going to make his NHL debut last year.
Right.
But entire season wiped out for two games. This year, I'm not as convinced. And the reason is he missed an entire year. I think they might look at it and say, you just need to play in the American Hockey League. And not because you're not good enough, just get a season in. And so I'm not saying that it couldn't happen. I just don't think they want to. I don't think the expectations are as high on Seeloff because he's coming back after an entire year missed.
Yeah,
right? So I think you almost have to naturally downgrade your expectations on a guy like that.
Kenny Agostino also in the lineup tonight. Kenny probably got maybe some of the most ice time of all the college guys last year.
Yeah.
Finished with
eight games in the NHL?
Got his first National Hockey League goal. A guy that I suspect starts in the American Hockey League this year, but, you know, right in that category along with Ben Hanowski and Corbin Knight. I'm not sure that they're top-end prospects, but I think one of those guys is probably likely going to come out and one day be an everyday NHLer and play a valuable role.
Yeah, it's not going to be every guy, right? It might be
You
kind of put these groups together. One of those guys,
And
one of Culkin or Kulak might be able to. Agostino didn't play the final two games in Penticton, got hurt on the Friday night. So coming back, that's good. It means that he'll be good to go for training camp. That's good to know. I'm with you. I think that there is kind of that group of forwards, Juris, Agostino, Hanowski, a little bit older, kind of, you know, closer to their mid-20s as opposed to their earlier 20s. Are all of them going to be NHLers? Probably not. Could one, maybe two of them become NHLers and in a bottom six type role? Yeah, maybe. Maybe you could see that happening.
7 o'clock.
Father David Bauer.
Yep.
And if you are unable to go to the game, first of all, tickets are available online and also at the door.
Yep.
But if you can't make it, it is going to be streamed live. The University of Calgary is going to stream it live.
Okay.
So you can check it out on there. And I imagine that the University of Calgary's website and their streaming service might get hit with quite a lot of demand. I know the numbers for the streaming in Penticton were pretty crazy, and everybody was kind of taken aback. Not just the Flames, but all four of the teams. So there's a lot of interest with prospects.
No, it's amazing. You know, we talk about 10 years ago, 10 years ago yesterday was the start of the lockout that cost the Seal 405 season. And, you know, you talk about the legacy of that, and one of it's the hard cap. And, you know, maybe this is something we can talk about a little bit more tomorrow, what the legacy is. But that was almost a way, kind of a defining moment, too, in the media and how the information, if you remember, that's where, you know, blogs really started. Eklund's blog about, you know, he was probably the most popular blog out there because it was about rumors about the lockout, that they were meeting, who was meeting with whom and those types of things. We really saw out of that, you know, blogging and then, you know, what, you know, all the other things, the podcasting and everything that, you know, would fall in behind that. And part of it is the demand. There was always been a demand. You know, you put it up there, people want it. People want to talk about the prospects. Same thing in the analytics community. You put it out there, people just want more. Mm-hmm. And in a small part, I think that's part of the legacy of 0405. People were so starved for information. They looked at alternative areas to get it. And really, I think hockey kind of cut the way in many cases.
Yeah, I agree. And now, you know, blogs, there's 17 per team or more, right?
Easily.
Guys cover this thing
easily.
Nonstop. Absolutely. Right. Brand new world still for a lot of people.
Coming up in the 4 o'clock hour, Jody Shelley, who covers the Columbus Blue Jackets, former Jacket himself for Fox Sports Television. He'll join us. We'll talk about the latest in the Ryan Johansson situation. And very excited, the East-West Hot Stove has a new home. It's 4:45 on Wednesdays. Al Morganti from CBS Sports in Philadelphia as well. Eric Dehatchuk from the Globe and Mail will join us. That's all coming up. Sportsnet 960, The Fan.